Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's move over to the Reiners. 4.5 months after Rob and Michelle Reiner were found stabbed to death in their Brentwood home, an autopsy report on how they died still ain't finished. The case against their son, Nick, has now been pushed to September. And it's not a trial. It's not even the preliminary hearing yet. It's a date to potentially set the preliminary hearing. We're getting like close to a year anniversary where we'll get to the preliminary hearing. The defense says it needs more discovery. The prosecution says it's waiting on the medical examiner. Both sides agreed to the delay because you don't have the information. You don't have the information. And Nick Reiner, the man facing two counts of first degree murder with death penalty eligibility, sat in court, consulted by his public defender, and said one word:
yeah.
So what is actually happening behind the scenes in this case, and what does the pace of this thing tell us about what both sides are building towards? Joining me to discuss, as always, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, and former prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis. Eric, if you were Jake or Romy Reiner right now, you lost both parents to violence. The person accused is your own brother. And the court just told you, come back in September, 5 months from now, for a hearing that isn't even a real hearing. This has got to be very, you know, devastating emotionally to the family. Because from the outside, it looks like nobody's in a hurry to get justice for Rob and Michelle. And I have to imagine the people who love them are watching this timeline and somewhat losing their minds. But that's the emotional side. Emotional side and legal side are two very different things and require very different framework to operate. But a year in for the preliminary hearing, I mean, is this crazy? Is this normal? Give me your thoughts.
I'm not sure I've ever seen such a delay just to get to the preliminary hearing stage. That's like the second step in a case like this, among like dozens of steps. So, you know, we're not even there yet. This is a nightmare for these folks that won't end. And in terms of what's going on, it's a bit of a head scratcher. Autopsies can take some time. I have seen them take about this amount of time or so. But especially if this was like a very violent death, like a clear stabbing or shooting or whatever, like usually those conclusions can be drawn rather quickly, and the autopsy, the medical examiner can amend their report later if need be. But delay, which might inure to the benefit of the defense.
Sure. I mean, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, I get you want to cross your T and dot your I. I know that this is going to be a case that's going to be under a microscope. So you really want to be sure you got everything and you can present it. But the method of death isn't really like even up for question here. It's like, we know he did it. It's more so why he did it. And was he in a state of mind where he could be held legally responsible for understanding he was causing the death of someone at that moment? Are those answers to be found in the physical reflection of an autopsy?
Not at all. No. In fact, most medical examiners expressly opine that, hey, not only can I not conclude who did this, but I can't conclude what was going on in their heads. That's outside the purview of their expertise. They can't talk about that. And also, Tony, with the preliminary hearing coming up, even if there are potential mental health defenses, those are rarely even considered at a preliminary hearing. And when they are, the judge usually says, hey, my job is to decide if there's problems. Cause for these charges. There might be defenses. There might be things that side can raise at trial. But the scope of preliminary hearing is rather narrow. Is there probable cause? We don't need a full mental health evaluation and all these mental health experts. I doubt they'd even be allowed to testify at the preliminary hearing. So what are we waiting for?
Yeah.
So I'm curious about this one, Eric. I'm gonna flip from the legal side to the maybe a pragmatic side on the human behavior side. Do you think, since you said it will, if it's going to benefit anyone, it's going to benefit defense on this to keep delaying this out? Do you think that, because we keep hearing all the issues they're having with Nick behind bars, and I mean, we're seeing it. He hasn't let go of his victim mentality. He still looks like a super nutter, all these things. Do you think defense might be delaying a bit to try all they can to try to regulate those meds he's on so they can actually potentially, since they know it's going to go to trial unless they plead out, which is another question I have, if you think he's going to do that. But do you think they're trying to make him a more compelling individual by delaying more to try to get those meds regulated out, and the more time they have, the greater chance they have at it? Or is that just, am I just doing too much thought experiment?
That very well could be a part of it. Along those lines, too, there might be some competency issues. And sometimes those are not made public. Sometimes there are private hearings and even meetings in chambers with judges about very sensitive private matters like that. I'm wondering if there might be some ongoing competency issue, because for this guy to be competent and face trial, he has to have an awareness of the charges and he has to be able to materially aid in his own defense. And perhaps defense is saying, hey, we've met them with this guy and he's screwing. We're not there yet, but we're not ready to raise competency just yet. Judge, why don't you give us a little more time to work on the meds, to work on the psychological piece of this, and try to get this in a place where it can be tried. It's at least possible that those conversations are being had and the public is unaware of them.
Is that a reason why also the prosecution might go along and agree to the delay too, because they want to make sure there's less chance for appeals after that?
I think that could be a part of it. If there was potential competency issues, prosecution doesn't want to convict somebody when there is a question as to whether they're competent and have that conviction come back. So maybe prosecution's like, hey, defense is working with this guy. They've got a meds regimen and they've got counselors who I'm sure he's seeing. And so we'll let them kind of do their thing to ensure that we can secure a conviction and that it remains final at the appellate stage.
My guess is we figured it out.
Well, I mean, give us some insight here on how the sausage is made. I mean, if this is a red herring to the public and we're like, this is the cover story, this is what we're telling the public right now, why not just say there's competency issues right now and we're going to, we need some time to get there. We've seen it in Daybell. We've seen it in a gazillion cases where it's not like, oh, they're kind of out of it right now. Game over. It's like, no, we're going to give them a chance to kind of get back on the saddle here so they can be competent in court. Why not just explain it that way? I mean, is it ethical? Is it even legal to delay the hearing here under a publicly stated false pretense? Does this happen behind the scenes where everybody back in the judges' chambers are on the same page of this is competency, but yeah, we don't have the autopsy yet, so let's just say it's that to the media? Does that happen?
It would be very unusual. But this is a very unusual case. You know, we were just talking about Koberger recently, where a public defender had one of their experts sign an NDA regarding that expert work, apparently. That is extremely uncommon, but the world's eyes were on that case. The world's eyes are on this case.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, and judges have discretion often to control the proceedings, to maintain decorum and integrity of the judicial institution. You know, there are things that happen what's called under seal. There are things that happen that are just not publicly available. So it's possible. But if defense really did think that their client had competency issues, usually you have an ethical duty to raise that. And then there's a whole sort of parallel competency procedure that you have to go through. So, I would say certainly unusual. It's an unusual case.
But again, it could be possible that, you know, it's a legitimate claim about the medical examiner's report, but since they're seeing, you know, so they can be slow walking that, knowing that the next issue they may have is a competency issue, buying time just because they think it might be an issue. I mean, just listening to Nick makes me think it's going to be an issue.
Yeah, and you know, Robin, I can understand the prosecutor really wanting to have that autopsy report by the time of the preliminary hearing. That is usually a critical piece of a preliminary hearing, and they probably just want to make sure that they have all of this ready to roll, so there are no missteps, there are no outs. That could be a piece of this delay as well.
And he's behind bars anyway. You know, it's one of these things. He's not on the loose. He's not on bail. And he's suffering behind bars. So, I mean, yeah, it's kind of strange.
When is the time for the defense of Nick Reiner to queue up the not guilty by reason of insanity plea? Because right now it's just sitting as not guilty. Under California law, you have to do two pleas. You have to do not guilty and not guilty by reason of insanity, two different filings. But they only got the one. Is that something that they are literally waiting for the pretrial hearing to bring that up? Is there a reason to wait for that? Is it more strategic on their part to wait for that rather than throwing that into the ether before the autopsy comes out?
In most jurisdictions, Tony, there is the courts want people to raise issues like not guilty for reason of insanity promptly. It's not something you can just sit on and then like do a trial by ambush thing a few weeks before the trial. Like, oh, actually, you know what? He's not guilty by reason of insanity. Now prosecution catch up. Usually you have to raise that quickly, just as you have to do with alibi in most jurisdictions. It's not something you can just sit on and wait. So it's a bit unusual that they haven't raised it yet. I'm sure they have done at least an initial mental health evaluation. And usually that initial evaluation can tell a defense attorney, hey, we have a viable NGRI plea or we don't. Unclear why they wouldn't be in a position to raise that defense if they're going to raise it.
When do you see the last, like the deadline for them being able to do that?
It varies by jurisdiction, but you know, I think in Colorado it says something like as early as practicable. And so, you know, if you've had the mental health evaluation and you have grounds to believe you're going to raise a not guilty by reason of insanity defense, you got to do it. There isn't always a hard and fast deadline; varies by jurisdiction. But it's usually the it's customary to have to do that early on, man. You can't just sit on that.
Yeah, is that another reason to delay right now using the medical examiner's excuse to do that so they could get more time to get that in? I'm just kind of stabbing at the wall.
I would think they've had enough time.
You would think.
You know, in cases where I've explored that, we did that within the first, you know, month and a half after the incident. And here we're going on months and months and months. I just don't see a reason why they haven't raised it yet if they believe that it's a valid defense.
I just keep going back to what the hell is taking nearly a year for an autopsy to be performed. I mean, is there that much of a backlog and it doesn't really matter who you are or what's pending? We're just gotta, I mean, they got the bodies. This is done. I mean, what more can possibly be needed to have extra time to complete this report? This just doesn't make any logical sense to me. Is there anyone in this case, defense or prosecution, that could somehow put a wedge into this that would be delaying that report in some way, shape, or I don't know the answer to this question, but it's a red flag. It doesn't make any sense to me. And when you see a red flag and something kind of critical is an autopsy, you're like, what the hell is going on here? Why is it? Rather than just accepting, they're slow.
Yeah, no, it's a head scratcher, you know, look at the case of Barry Morphy, right? So Suzanne Morphy, yeah. his wife and the alleged victim in the case, her body wasn't found until at least a year after she disappeared. Yeah. It was all decomposed and the elements had gone through it. You know, and so that's in that case where they had to like go into her bones and try to find this extremely esoteric poison that they claim they found. That's going to take a good amount of time. But when you have a rather traditional means of death that these coroners have experienced, I imagine, hundreds of times, what would be the hangup? Why can't you just issue the autopsy report with the apparent findings? I just don't get it. Has there been turnover in the office? Has it, you know, I just don't know. It's strange.
I'm curious, did they get Celeste, you know, in the David case, did they get her autopsy and she was like severely decomposed in a bag? What? I think they got hers faster than this. I mean, she was a puddle in a bag, in a frunk.
It might be the same folks, honestly.
I know. Maybe it took too long doing hers.
I don't know.
Good point.
And because so what are they? I mean, what takes so long in this autopsy? I mean, it's not. I mean, it's a. I mean, it's gunshots. I mean, just what the hell? I don't get it.
No, I hear you.
Yeah, there's just it's a big question, and I think one that deserves an answer. Maybe some more digging there might be a good idea. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to hear from you. Be sure to weigh in. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Nick Reiner was asked a question in a Los Angeles courtroom at his most recent hearing. Judge Sam Ota wanted to know if the man accused of stabbing both his parents to death in the master bedroom of their Brentwood home understood that he retained the right to speed up the legal process, that he didn't have to agree to the delay. Nick turned to his public defender, Kimberly Green. They spoke briefly. Then he faced the judge and said one word.
Yeah.
That was it. Blank-faced. Yellow jail shirt, blue pants, waist shackle. Closely cropped beard. He blinked repeatedly but appeared to follow the proceeding. The hearing lasted minutes, and the case involving the alleged murder of one of Hollywood's most celebrated filmmakers and his wife, a case that has generated non-stop national coverage since December, was pushed to September. Do you remember the very... Okay, 5 days before that hearing, Nick's older brother, Jake, sat down and wrote thousands of words about what was stolen from him. He published them on Substack under the title Mom and Dad. You read this, it's worth reading. I've restacked it on our Substack. The link is in the description. He wrote about the phone calls from his sister, Romy. First that their father was dead, then minutes later that their mother was dead. He wrote about the 45-minute Lyft ride from Union Station to the family home in Brentwood and called it unendurable. He wrote about weddings his parents won't attend, grandchildren they'll never hold, a career they won't get to watch him build. He wrote about the fear his parents must have felt in their final moments and said they were the last people in the world to deserve what happened to them. One brother wrote thousands of words because the grief demanded it. The other could barely manage one. And the system that's supposed to deliver justice for Rob and Michelle Reiner told everyone to come back in 5 months. So what exactly happened in that courtroom? Nick appeared before the judge at the Clara Shortridge Fultz Criminal Justice Center in downtown Los Angeles. Green told the judge she's still waiting on additional discovery from the prosecution and requested a new court date. Deputy District Attorney Jonathan Chung confirmed that the DA's office is still waiting on the final autopsy reports. He agreed with the defense's request. Both sides, prosecution and defense, they're both in a holding pattern. The judge set the next hearing now for September 15th. And that September date isn't even the preliminary hearing. It's a hearing to potentially set the date for the preliminary hearing. The actual proceeding where prosecutors present evidence and a judge decides whether there's enough to send this to trial, that won't happen before fall at the earliest and likely later. Might even happen after the first year anniversary date. That's how long these things take. Nick has been behind bars at the Twin Towers Correctional Facility since December 14th. He pled not guilty in February. He waived his right to a speedy trial. And 4.5 months after Rob and Michelle Reiner were found dead, the case still hasn't cleared the starting line.
The bottleneck is the autopsy. The medical examiner's full reports and Robin Michelle are still not complete. NBC's legal analyst Royal Oaks explained why that isn't as unusual as it sounds. There are microscopic tissue analysis, evaluation of every single wound on each victim, and the DA needs what Oaks called a perfect autopsy report because it's going to be cross-examined under a microscope in court. So they want to bring the best to the game. The initial findings were released late last year. Cause of death, both listed as multiple sharp force injuries. Manner of death, homicide. But the LAPD requested a court order on December 29th to seal the full reports. The department said the order was sought to ensure detectives learned important information before the media and public did. Since then, the detailed findings have been locked down. And until those reports are complete and turned over to the defense, this case does not move. That is the legal reality. It's slow, it's procedural, and it operates on its own timeline regardless of what's happening to the people caught inside it. What's happening to those people is a different kind of unfolding, one that doesn't pause for court dates or discovery deadlines. Jake's essay struck a nerve. Tens of thousands of people read it. It wasn't a legal statement. It wasn't a media strategy. Jake said a grief expert encouraged him to write it, and he did. He wrote about his father as authentic, passionate, a man whose sense of humor was always Jake's sense of humor. He said he'd never go to a Dodger stadium again without feeling his dad's presence and hearing his voice explain why Shohei Ohtani should never bat in the leadoff spot. He wrote about his mother as his confidant, the person he could talk to for hours when life got complicated. He said he loved to laugh and that he always felt like the funniest person alive around her because she was the only one who'd laugh at his bad jokes. He called his father his hero. He said his dad encouraged his pivot from broadcasting to acting and gave him unconditional support. He wrote about wanting to work on a project together. He wrote about all three children receiving love that he described as truly unconditional. And then he wrote the part that stays with you. He said he would trade every Dodger game, every Broadway show, every vacation, every privileged experience of his entire life for one more hour to talk to them to say goodbye. Jake doesn't mention Nick by name anywhere in the essay. He refers to him once as my brother in a paragraph about their parents' love for all three of their children. That restraint says everything. Jake didn't write an indictment. He didn't write a rebuttal. He wrote a portrait of two people he loved, and he let the absence speak for itself. Now, hold that against what's reportedly happening on the other side of this family. According to insiders cited by Globe magazine, Nick Reiner is allegedly planning a revenge tell-all from inside Twin Towers. The reporting describes him as fuming over how his family and famous friends have just left him, wanting to lift the lid on what he calls his parents' sordid secrets and allegedly determined to name as many names and cause as much embarrassment as he possibly can. The quote attributed to him by insiders describes his goal as offering his side of the story, detailing why his parents were butchered in their own bed. Because somehow there's going to be a logical reason where we all go, oh, well, I see why you butchered them. That makes total sense now. Jake wrote about the fear his parents felt in their final moments. He said they deserved to be loved, respected, and appreciated. And according to Globe's reporting, Nick allegedly wants to publish a manuscript explaining why those same parents had it coming. Is it all an act? Is this all performance? Is this all performance to seem as crazy as possible to go for the insanity defense? Maybe. And sometimes people are just effing crazy. An insider told Globe that Jake and Romy want nothing to do with their brother. The source described Nick as Satan incarnate to the surviving family members. The insider said the siblings will spend the rest of their lives trying to recover from the trauma and grief Nick allegedly inflicted, and that the notion of a tell-all would pile agony on top of pain that hasn't even begun to settle. The distance between Jake and Nick isn't just emotional, it is structural. Sources confirmed to TMZ that Jake and Romy have no plan to hire a private attorney for Nick and will not cover any legal bills. Nick's defense is Nick's defense. They're not involved, the source said. They haven't visited him at Twin Towers. They haven't interviewed him or intervened in his legal strategy. When Alan Jackson withdrew from the case in January, citing circumstances beyond Nick's control, their family didn't scramble to find a replacement. They let the public defender's office take over the lifeline that held for years through reportedly 18 rehab stays, a conservatorship, police visits to the family home, incident after incident. That lifeline is reportedly gone. But there's a dimension to this family's response that complicates the clean narrative of abandonment. And it might be the most revealing part of the entire case. Sources confirm that the Reiner family, Jake, Romy, and their half-sister Tracy, are not in favor of the death penalty. They've reportedly made this position clear to the DA's office. According to sources close to the family, they view what happened as a catastrophic failure of the mental health treatment, not a premeditated act. They reportedly believe that executing Nick isn't justice and won't repair what was broken. And Rob Reiner himself was vehemently opposed to capital punishment. Think about what that means in practice. The siblings who called Nick Satan incarnate, who cut off all financial support, who won't visit, won't hire him an attorney, those same siblings are telling prosecutors, don't seek his execution. They're protecting the life of a person accused of destroying their family, not because they've forgiven him, not because they believe he deserves leniency, but because their father stood for something and they're honoring what he stood for, even while living inside the nightmare his youngest son allegedly created. It's not weakness. It's not denial. That's a family carrying the values of two dead parents forward in the hardest possible circumstance, a circumstance where those values directly benefit the person accused of taking those parents away. Jake's essay asked for love and compassion, the same principles, he wrote, that his parents lived by. And opposing the death penalty for your brother while simultaneously refusing to speak to him is what living by those principles actually looks like when the stakes are real and the cost is personal. The legal road ahead is long and uncertain. September 15th is a hearing to set a hearing. The preliminary hearing itself, where evidence is presented and a judge decides if a case goes to trial, won't happen before fall. Death penalty deliberations remain ongoing. DA Hochman has said repeatedly that his office takes the process extremely seriously and that the most experienced death penalty prosecutors in the office will assist in the evaluation. He's also said he will consult the family. Though under California law, their wishes are one factor among many, not a veto. The insanity defense question remains unanswered. Nick pled not guilty. A single plea under California law pursuing a not guilty by reason of insanity defense requires a dual plea, not guilty and not guilty by reason of insanity. The single plea keeps every door open. Nick's documented history, the schizoaffective disorder diagnosis, the reported medication change roughly a month before the murders, the year-long conservatorship that expired in 2021, the behavior sources... have described as delusional and almost childlike inside Twin Towers. All of it suggests a defense strategy that hasn't been publicly revealed, but is almost certainly being assembled. None of that changes what the family is living through right now. Jake wrote his essay because a grief expert told him it might help, not because a lawyer told him it would be strategic. He revealed that his upcoming birthday would be his first without his parents. Romy hasn't spoken publicly yet. Jake wrote that she'll tell her story in her own way and in her time. The family is processing something the legal system can't put a calendar on or a continuance on. The daily weight of waking up inside a loss that doesn't have a return date. And while the courts take their time, while microscopic tissue is analyzed and discovery is compiled and hearing dates are set, to set other hearing dates. The human wreckage doesn't wait for anyone's schedule. Because autopsy isn't ready. Doesn't defer because both sides need more evidence. It just sits there every morning waiting for Jake to wake up and convince himself again
than it was in a dream. Nick Reiner said one word at his most recent court appearance.
Yeah.
He said it after consulting with his attorney about whether he understood his rights. Jake Reiner wrote thousands and thousands of words the week before about Dodger games and bad jokes and unconditional love and the fear his parents felt at the last moments of their lives. One brother is trying to rewrite the story of a family from inside a jail cell. The other is just trying to survive the truth of what that family lost. And the system responsible for deciding what justice looks like for Rob and Michelle Reiner told everyone to come back in 5 months. Rob and Michelle don't get to come back. That's the part no continuance can fix. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. I'd love for you to weigh in, and we'll continue our conversation right there. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching us. Substack, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, iHeart, we're everywhere. Just hit subscribe, and then you got us in video and audio. Wherever you go, we will be there too. That's kind of creepy, isn't it? Maybe, maybe not. All right, until next time. My name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever?
Cabin crew.
Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus, terms and conditions apply.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase.